So thanks so much for the introduction. I especially would like to thank the organizers, like Lincoln and Paul and Roman, to have invited here. It's a great conference. It's a great place. It's been very productive 2.5 weeks so far. So I would like to talk about atomic reservoirs of polar molecules. This is a cool molecule session and how about how to cool molecules. So yesterday we already saw these pictures from the review of 2009 from Carr, Krems, DeMille, and Junyi. And so what we'd like to do today is to talk about a work we've done in collaboration with Peter Zoller and Alexander Glaslen-Botzau on some idea to bridge the gap for cooling molecules in between, say, the range 10 millikelvin to 10 microkelvin. And the idea is to engineer a kind of a combination of sympathetic and Sisyphus type coolings using Rydberg atoms as a reservoir. Now, this was actually, this is work we've done kind of during the last year. I will also misuse a little bit of my time towards the end, stimulated by discussions. We have a lot of lively discussion last week with Shlapnikov, Strengari. You can see the talks online about various states of matter, and especially super solidity, which is this kind of weird state of matter in which particles can be at the same time in a crystal and a superfluid. And so I would like to report on some very recent results done in collaboration with Fabio Cinti, Tommaso Macri, Wolfgang Lechner, and Thomas Paul, which is about the ground state phase diagram for a strongly interacting gas of soft core bosons. And I would like to report maybe the first observation of a super solid in free space in a strongly interacting regime. We find this quite exciting and quite fitting to this conference. Okay, so the main topic is about cooling molecules with a Rydberg atom reservoir. And so the idea is to use atoms as in a blue shielding situation. What is blue shielding? So this is an idea which came up in the 90s from Suomine, Jevanainen, Paul Julien, Bagnato, and colleagues. And the idea is quite simple. So if you have a two-level system, for example, we have a ground state and excited state, and a laser which is coupling the ground state to the excited state, fire the tune on the blue side. Now, if you have collision of two particles, you can plot the Born-Oppenheimer potentials. Here we have energy, and here we have interparticle distance, and now the particles are coming in the ground state. And now the excited state potentials are split by dipole-dipole interactions, and so if you have a laser, now the detuning becomes position-dependent. And so you can have a resonant condom point when the detuning becomes of the order of dipole-dipole interactions, and so the particles coming in the ground state are essentially excited to the excited state, and then they reach some classical turning point and can go back either in the excited state or in the ground state. And so this can suppress a short-range velocity collision, which can happen, for example, at a distance of a few nanometers or so. Can also be used to tune large elastic cross-sections between particles, and so far has been used for particles of a single species. But something bad was supposed to happen, and has been pointed out to happen, which is the following thing. You can have spontaneous emission when you are in the excited state manifold, and the two particles are going up the potential, then there can be spontaneous emission, and so the particles are then transferred to the lowest state. And now the point here is that this can be a bad event, having a dissipative effect in cold collision. Now the problem is, the point is that this can also be an opportunity because you can have an energy loss in the system corresponding to this jump. And so what we ask ourselves is if we can actually control this kind of spontaneous emission process and having a cooling mechanism, and now use this kind of blue shielding techniques in the context of mixtures of particles. And so say, for example, having molecules and then having Rydberg atoms. And so using the spontaneous emission to actually cool molecules in this kind of systems. So this is a basic idea, and we will use this kind of idea now in the following. So what are Rydberg atoms? I mean, everybody here knows what this is. So we have these are, for example, highly excited states, electronic states of, for example, like Li atoms. So an electron is pulled far apart from the core. It is highly polarizable system, which have a long radiative lifetime of the order of milliseconds, maybe 100 milliseconds. And we have a large displacement of the core and the electron, this gives rise to essentially very large dipole moments, and so very strong and long-range interactions not only between atoms and atoms, but also atoms and molecules. So this is basically the idea. We want to use this very strong interaction that we can build between the atoms and the molecule to engineer interaction between the two. So the idea we have in mind is a so-called, so what we call a quantum pinball machine. It's kind of a joke, but the idea is essentially to engineer dissipative interactions between the atoms and the molecules. So the idea is to have a molecule which is hot and it is colliding with ground state atoms. But then there is also an off-resonant laser field, as we have seen before. So when the molecule comes too close to the atoms, now the atoms are excited to a Rydberg state. And so we can essentially have a laser-assisted blue shield between the atoms and the molecule. This helps to protect the molecule from short-range collisions with the atoms, which can be, in principle, inelastic. So we can have a blue shield, but also can also enormously increase the cross-section because, for example, this characteristic radius for the collision can be of the order of a few hundred nanometers thanks to the very strong dipole transition dipole moments of the excited Rydberg states. So this helps to increase enormously the cross-sections between the atom and the molecule, and so we can have fast thermalization between the two. Now, if the molecule comes too close to the atom, then we want to have a situation in which we would like to engineer a situation in which a photon is emitted, and this takes away the collision energy. In this way, we have a photon-assisted inelastic collision, and we can cool the molecule in principle using a kind of a collisional type Sisyphus effect. So every time the molecule comes very too close to an atom, then there is spontaneous emission of the photon, and the molecule goes away with a much lower energy. Now, the idea is to cool molecules essentially to tens of microkelvin in a peak collision, and to do this possibly in a three-dimensional picture, not just in 2D as the picture here. I would like to point out that there is related work from Hans-Peter Büchler and Sebastian Huber. Their idea there was to actually engineer again interactions between the atoms and the molecule, and now essentially use that to perform laser cooling of the molecules using Rydberg atoms. Now, to do this scheme that we want to do, we have a few challenges. First of all, we have to design efficiently atom-molecule interactions, and so we need to have a particle deceleration. So the idea is the following. We have the molecule colliding with the atoms, and we would like to engineer a purely repulsive potential between the atom and the molecule. So this is a sketch of a Bonnet-Oppenheimer potential. Here we have the energy, and here interparticle distance. So the way in which we want to do this is to have this Rydberg dressing technique. Now, and then we would like to have the following thing. We would like to design a situation in which the molecule climbs up to a certain point of the potential, and then when we want, so at a certain specific point of the interaction potential, we want to engineer spontaneous emission so that there is the emission of the photon and essentially on the atomic side. And so and then the atom is sent back to the ground state, and the atom molecule complex can go out happily without further interactions. Now, because there is spontaneous emission at a certain point, as we said, we also have an energy loss corresponding to this energy gap here. And then we have to specify what this corresponds to physically. Then in principle, we can reset the system to zero by pumping back the energy, pumping back the atom to the original ground state of the system. And then we can have basically a cycle of cooling, like in Sisyphus type cooling. Of course, we have defects and limitations for the scheme, and we have to understand which one these are. And now the idea is to go through all these 4 points. So first of all, to design atom-molecule interaction, to understand how to do control spontaneous emission, and then checks for the limitation of the system. So how do we engineer interaction? This is actually quite simple. So we have here a sketch of the energy levels for the Rydberg atom. We have the ground state and some chosen excited state, which has an energy difference to a lower line state, which has a transition dipole moment between the two. And we choose this state such that the energy difference here corresponds roughly to the splitting of the rotational splitting of the molecule. Here we have a simple rigid rotor. We could have different kind of molecules. Now the point is that this energy here for the rotational spectrum of the molecule is roughly the same as the one between two excited Rydberg states of the atoms. Now because of this, we can have exchange of photons between the two systems, and these are essentially dipole-dipole interactions. And this can be very efficient because the transition dipole moments here are extremely large, can be of the order of kilodibytes in excited read state. So if these energies are exactly the same, we can have essentially flip-flops between the two. Of course, if we stay now far away from a certain characteristic length, which is essentially which comes as a combination of the dipole moments, transition dipole moments on the atomic side and on the molecular side over essentially the energy difference between the two. So if we are a little bit off resonance, then we have essentially repulsive van der Waals interaction where we can adiabatically eliminate this state and this excited state. And so we have essentially repulsive van der Waals interactions between the Rydberg state and the molecule. And these are now isotropic, and so in principle can work in three dimensions. And so the blue shielding works in the following way at this point. Now here we have a Born-Oppenheimer potential, and here, so we have energy and interparticle distance. And now we are plotting here the molecule, which is always in the ground state, so we only write down the state of the atom, which is the ground state in the blue when the molecule is approaching the atom. So we have the ground state, the excited state, and a laser here. So the molecule is coming in the ground state, and of course the Rydberg state is now has now lower energy because we have a blue detuned laser. But now the energy of the atom molecule complex in the Rydberg state goes up due to repulsive van der Waals interaction. And so we have a crossing with the ground state, which actually becomes an anti-crossing due to the presence of the laser. And so in principle, if we have large enough Rabi frequency, then we can engineer a very large splitting here. And so the molecule will be adiabatically following this interaction potential, exactly like in the blue shielding schemes. Now, of course, in mixtures of atoms and molecules. So now, this, the position of a condom point where we have this, this crossing here determines essentially the characteristic radius of the collision, which can be of the order of a few hundred nanometers. And so basically, the molecule will come here, start climbing up this interaction potential, and then go back in an elastic collision, while the blue shielding protects from short-range inelastic collision of the system. If you now want to engineer the trapdoor, we can now we can add a layer of complexity by adding a second excited state, which is a lower line excited state with respect to the Rydberg state. And now we place its energy here. And the point is that we can add a second laser. If we pay the price of having a second laser, which is blue detuned from the first resonance, then if the molecule is now coming up the potential and is coming too close to the atom, we can now transfer the atomic population to this excited Rydberg state using essentially this quenching laser. So the atomic population is transferred from the R state down to the E state. And now we assume that the E state and the molecule do not interact. And so essentially, if we design in such a way that this plateau here, which is corresponding to a non-interaction, a weak interaction between the atom and the molecule, is long enough, then we have enough time for the atom to have spontaneous emission, so if we have a large width of this state here. So essentially, what happens here is the molecule comes up here, we engineer a first resonant condom point, the molecule decelerates, climbs up this potential. If it comes too close, then it can essentially enter this region. And in this region here, it interacts only weakly with the atom, which is in its excited atomic state, which decays fast to a second ground state. And the photon here takes away the collision energy. And so basically, the atom molecule complex is transferred to a second ground state, which is this purple line here. And so basically, they can now separate at a low energy collision. And we have gained this energy loss corresponding to the spontaneous emission of the photon. So because we can now repump, for example, the atom to the original ground state from G2 to G1, now we can close the cycle, and we have a kind of a cycling Sisyphus-type cooling, now only due to collisions. So what does it happen in a true collision? So imagine that now we have a lot of particles, and they have a Boltzmann distribution of energies when they collide with a molecule, with the atoms. So we have a lot of molecules which are distributed according to this Maxwell with this distribution, which is a Boltzmann distribution. Then they are all colliding with the atoms, and now this is what happens after the collision. So First of all, we fix the position of the atom here at, say, a position r equal to 0. And we just look at the molecule coming up. And the molecule has now to climb up this potential. If it has enough kinetic energy to climb up the potential, then it can reach this region here where spontaneous emission, and then this is the cooling cycle. So we are plotting here the energy distribution after the collision as a function of energy. And this is, and we see that now what is important is the impact parameter B. So if the impact parameter of the collision is larger than the characteristic range of the collision, which is this condom point, then the figure here shows that the distribution is essentially unaltered. So it's the same distribution as before. So nothing happens to the distribution of the after the collision in the situation in which we are just essentially fixing the atom at a certain position. This only the case in which the impact parameter essentially is larger or equal to the condom point. But now what is more interesting is that for all the particles which actually collide with the atom within a radius of order of RC, then this is what happens. So after the collision, all the population which have an energy larger than the characteristic step delta, which is the height of this interaction potential, which depends on the difference between the frequencies of the two lasers, then all this population is transferred to lower energy. And so you have kind of a shift of all energies that you had here down to very low energy. This is very dramatic, especially in the case of head-on collision, like for B equal to 0 between the two. So you see, essentially, this is what I wanted to say about this kind of system. Here we have chosen a situation which we had, for example, an initial temperature for the molecules of the order of millikelvin and a step of the same energies. Now, these are characteristic temperatures at which the scheme will work, and also characteristic energies that we can cool. Now, we said we have two different cooling mechanisms. And so we have sympathetic cooling and also Sisyphus-type cooling. So which one dominates? It turns out that, as one would expect, if the mass of the atoms is smaller than the molecular one, then sympathetic cooling is very efficient. Also, if you have, instead of a mass of the atom which is larger than the molecular one, and the energy of the molecules when they collide with the atoms is larger than this potential energy here, which is the step delta, then Sisyphus-type cooling is quite efficient. Of course, you can always change the height of this potential by playing with the lasers. Now, so you can reduce it during the experiment. So now, of course, there are always defects. And so what are the defects in this case? The nastier defects are Landau-Zener type transitions at the condom points, as usual. So the molecules, if the molecule is too fast, and if we don't have large enough splitting here, then the molecule, in principle, can just fly through and just populate directly this Rydberg state and go out in the wrong state. This can give losses, which are pretty fast. Now, of course, as you know, Landau-Zener type transitions, you always have expressions for the transition probability of this kind, where this omega here is the width, which is essentially the laser power you can put into the system. So you can suppress these transitions here at the price of paying more laser power. If you have laser, a crossing at the second condom point, this is actually not so dramatic, because even if the molecules are transferred here and then go out in the excited Rydberg state, well, then the atom can always decay to the ground state. So losses here are not very crucial. What is crucial is the losses at the first condom point. What molecule works best? Well, so this is a larger limitation, maybe. So far, we have only looked at situations in which we have molecules with a large rotational constant. And the reason for that is that if you have a large rotational constant of several gigahertz, then it is you can reach very convenient Rydberg states on the atomic side. And the reason for that is that if you go, for example, in between NF46 or 45, for example, for cesium atoms, for the alkalis, then you see immediately that it is not very difficult to find a situation in which you can detune very far from each resonance. If you go very much high with a principal quantum number n, like for rubidium-cesium, the splitting here would be, for example, 500 megahertz. then you have to, in order to have coincidence between the electronic structure and the rotational structure, you have to go up very high in the Rydberg series. And then it becomes a bit inconvenient to detune far from each transition. OK, so I guess I have still a few minutes. Perfect, thanks. Good, so in the last third of the talk, I would like to now report about this defect-induced supersolidity. Now, originally I didn't plan to have this into the talk, but we had a lot of discussions last week about the origin of this kind of phase of matter. And I would like to report on some recent work done in collaboration with Fabio Cinti, Tommaso Macri, Wolfgang Lechner, and Thomas Pohl, which we find quite interesting. So the idea is the following. Take just cold atoms with short-range interactions in an optical lattice. So we have, was pointed out in this famous paper, that if you put now, for example, bosonic particles inside an optical lattice, in the lowest band, you have now a Hamiltonian, which is the so-called Bose-Hubbard model, where you have a kinetic energy for particles hopping from one side to the next, and then you have some interaction energy, which are proportional to the on-site three-dimensional scattering length. And then maybe you have a kinetic energy here. And now, the phase diagram of this Hamiltonian is quite well known and has been probed experimentally in many different experiments. So you have here the chemical potential, and here we have kinetic to interaction energy ratio. And so you can only have two kind of different phases. You have a superfluid phase, where particles are delocalized throughout the whole lattice when kinetic energy dominates over interaction energy. Now, if you have the same number of particles as the number of sites, so you can actually localize particles at each site, so you can have a superfluid to Mott insulator transition if the interaction energy is larger than the kinetic energy. And this exhausts, essentially, the phase diagram. Now, the point is, if now you put, for example, polar molecules in a lattice, now your Hamiltonian is now a single-band extended Hubbard Hamiltonian, where you have the kinetic energy for hopping of a molecule from one side to the next. And then you have interactions, which are, for example, dipole-dipole interaction decay like 1 over a cube. So we have all the molecules polarized in the presence of an external electric field in two dimensions. Now, each molecule is interacting with dipole-dipole interaction with each other molecules in the lattice. And maybe then you have a chemical potential. Now, the phase diagram is depicted here. And we have here the chemical potential. And here you have the kinetic to interacting energy ratio at the first lattice site, so J over V in the Hamiltonian. Now, exactly as before, we see the following thing. We see the formation of a lobe structure in the system, which corresponds to the formation of gapped phases. But now this happens at fractional fillings of the lattice. For example, a filling 1/2, you have a checkerboard solid, which is like this one depicted here. So for strong interaction and certain fillings of the lattice, you can have solid phases. If you have weak interaction, you always have a superfluid. But now, more interesting is that in between these two phases, you can have an intermediate phase. An intermediate phase is a coexistence of being at the same time a solid and a liquid. And it's depicted here. So here you have a checkerboard solid in 1D. So one particle here, one particle here, one particle here. And then you have, if you add a few particles, so if you go up in this phase diagram here, you go in this region, green region here, then the extra particle, instead of destroying the lattice, they delocalize throughout the whole lattice, providing a superfluid fraction in the system. And so there has been a lot of work from many people already starting in the early 90s predicting the existence in this kind of this kind of behavior. How do you actually determine the existence of a supersolid phase of matter in an experiment? So actually, how you define a supersolid? You need to have the following two other parameters which are finite at the same time. First of all, you need to have a finite superfluid fraction, which measures how much superfluid you have in the system. And second, you need a finite static structure factor, which signals the fact that you have a periodicity associated with the crystal. In this case, if you have a checkerboard solid, you need a pi-pi periodicity. So if you now take this phase diagram, for example, and you start from here in the checkerboard solid, you have filling 1/2, and then you start removing particles, so you add vacancies. Then you start essentially cutting down the phase diagram in this direction. And you see that if you do that, if you remove particles from filling 1/2, you see that both the superfluid fraction go up and the static stressor factor go down, but there is a region of parameter where they are both finite and system size independent. Now, the presence of these both order parameters here signals the existence of a supersolid. And again, there has been a lot of work for people pointing out the existence of this kind of state of matter if you have an underlying lattice. And what we did was to propose a microscopic model, and maybe this can be realized with molecules for the first time. It would be very exciting. But actually, these ideas for the supersolid had been put forward by Andreev, Lifshitz, and Chester more than 40 years ago in the context of the ground state of helium-4. And this happens in free space. So what is the idea there? The idea was the following. What they proposed in 64 is that if you take a chunk of helium, 4 and you put it in the ground state, then it is under strong pressure, it is a solid. Now, if you start rotating the solid, you may, if you have a, if you have, say, defects in the form of vacancies or interstitials, which are delocalized, now you should be able to measure the associated superfluid fraction, which is associated with the delocalization of defects in the system. And the way in which you can do it is by measuring the frequencies of oscillations in this so-called bucket experiment. So you put the chunk of matter in a bucket, you rotate it, and look for the frequencies of rotation, which are proportional to the square root of the momentum of inertia. And if you have a superfluid, you should see the decoupling of the superfluid from the rotation. So now, the amazing thing is that in 2004, there were experiments from Kim and Chang who has claimed that they could observe this kind, exactly this, they performed this kind of experiment and they could observe this kind of behavior in helium-4. And now the point, and there has been a lot of theory and experiments trying to confirm or disprove this claim until this October, where the same authors essentially went back and said, well, actually, our original observations were not correct because we were artificially imposing a certain amount of defects in the system, so the ground state was of a helium-4 is actually solid. So, okay, so then what we did was the following thing. Motivated by work with Rydberg atoms, a couple of years ago, we looked at this kind of situation in which if you have two particles, again, now in the which are dressed by the ground state with an excited state using a reddy-tuned laser from an excited state Rydberg resonance, in the Rydberg blockade mechanisms, in the Rydberg blockade scenario, now the ground state between interacting particles is the following. You have essentially an interaction potential between two particles which is flat and goes down like some power law, 1/r³ or 1/r⁶. And now if you focus on the long range part of interaction potential, you can have, if you do now, for example, quantum Monte Carlo simulations, you can show that the ground state is either superfluid or a crystal. And now here the superfluid is depicted as a square of a many-body wave function taken directly from the Monte Carlo simulations, and the superfluid is a mess. While the crystal is a crystal, you can see the dots corresponding to a real calculation of a crystal formation, and the dots are phonons, which are both quantum and classical. Now, if you have sufficiently high density, we've shown, and also Thomas Pohl and several other people, have shown that particles like to pile up on top of each other if the density is sufficiently high. And now the ground state can become something like this, which is a calculation for the ground state for 400 particles, where you see the formation of a self-assembled array of mesoscopic superfluid droplets. So particles tend to form little droplets, and each droplet can exchange particles, giving rise to a global superfluid fraction. Okay, so this was interesting. Now the criticism, so this was essentially an idea of a supersolid. So this is a proposal for observing a supersolid behavior with Rydberg gases. Now, what kind of supersolid is this? Well, actually, if you plot, this is what we did now. We calculated the phase diagram, the generic phase diagram for a gas of particles interacting with the following Hamiltonian. You have kinetic energy here, and here you have interactions. Now you see now these interactions are exactly of the kind I was plotting before, so flat, and then they decay like 1/r⁶. Now if you plot the phase diagram as a function of density in this direction, so if you increase the density of the system, you essentially are going up this phase diagram here, and if you increase the interaction strength, which is this U here, you go in this direction. So then you see the following thing, that the ground state, as we said, if you stay at low interaction and low density, like here, or very weak interaction in any case, the system is always in a superfluid phase. While if you... Oh, OK, good. So if you go to, if you stay at a very low density, then you can have, for example, a crystal with one particle per side. This is my last slide. So the phase we suggested before was the following. At high density, if you have 5 or 500 particles, particles can be in this red region here, which is a supersolid where you have this formation of little droplets. Now, this supersolid here is actually a mean field type. So if you do, say, Gross-Pitayevsky, and not just Monte Carlo, but you do simple Gross-Pitayevsky solution, you would find this kind of structure. Now, the point here is that if you go towards low density, you see the formation of little bubble structure. You see commensurability effects. So if you zoom in this region here, you see that around 2, the superfluid to supersolid transition merges with the second transition. And the system is a crystal. And if you move out of this, you have this kind of pictures here, which is the last thing I want to say. So if you are here, so if you start from exactly 2 particles per side, the ground state is this picture here, where you have exactly a little crystal form with 2 particles per side. But now if you go below this, if you remove a few particles, exactly as it happens in lattices, but now it's in free space, the vacancies here start to become very mobile. They start to jump around these little droplets. And now here we are indicating the movement of 2 vacancies in the system, which provide a superfluid fraction on top of the crystalline phase. And the superfluid fraction is now plotted versus amount of defects, is linear with the amount of defect, showing the existence of a supersolid behavior in free space. Thanks. By the way, for the expert, this basically solves, I don't know if you watched Big Bang Theory. So this is a solution of Big Bang Theory first series. OK, thanks. These are the collaborators, Alexander Gletzle, Botzau, and Peter Soller for the cooling mechanism. And for the defect induced supersolidity, Fabio Cimpi, Tommaso Macri, Thomas Pohl in Dresden, and Wolfgang Lechner in Innsbruck. Thanks.
Thank you, Guido. Let's have questions.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I was wondering at when in this cooling scheme, when the when you get this decay down at close approach, is there a probability of it to keep going towards the core? Are you protected from this?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good point. So in principle, you want to have this region where you have this E state, say where you know you transfer the molecule, the atom, on this low lying state, which is say large enough. So this has to happen far away from the core of the, so maybe at a distance of 300 nanometers, so that the atom, while the molecules flies by, the atom has a chance to decay. Now the point is that if you want to be sure that nothing bad happens at short distance, so if you know for some reason this doesn't work, you can always add, in principle, a third laser and do blue shielding also at short distance. Now, of course, this comes at the expense of additional laser, and every laser you put in becomes more complicated to be fine-tuned from any other transition, and so becomes a much more complicated scheme. But in principle, you can always have, essentially, add a third laser and have a short-range blue shielding to avoid this kind of short-range collision. That's a very good point.
Next question.
So maybe I missed it, but the particles need to stay trapped, right? So how do you imagine that the molecules in the Rydberg atoms, how they stay in a trap?
Okay, so that's a very good point. So I mean, the atoms are, that's no problem, because there are many, many ways in which you can have a cloud of cold atoms. So that's, you can trap it magnetically or optically or what you want. The molecules do not, in principle, need to be confined in a regime because they're just flying by. So then once you have, when you go below, say, a few millikelvin, you can always also trap them. But If they have, say, 10 millikelvin, it will become much more difficult a bit. But in principle, they can just fly by in the region where the Rydberg atoms are present, as long as they essentially collide in between. I'm not saying it's easy, but...
But the system will, the cooling will still work if there is a magnetic field present to trap the atoms and molecules.
Yes.
Just a naive question about the many-body thing, and just to try to make the link between, you know, collision people and many-body people, as we tried last week. Now, I was wondering, this supersolid phase that you describe, my naive picture is that it's just like if you would kind of observe the formation, the transition between superfluid the supersolid phase looks like some kind of intermediate. And I was wondering, is it a real phase transition, or is it something like more continuous toward the end? So is there that just molecules which are kind of blobs here or there, or like a continuous thing, or, you know?
So this is a first order phase transition. So you can see it because it's like a liquid-solid transition.
Yeah.
So now, so this is actually first order, and it's driven by, in this region here, by rotor instability, so-called. So we discussed last week also with Jora Schlappico had a work on these kind of things. But what I want to say, so basically this is a real phase transition. So the sharp first order transition at the position that you can see here between the blue and the red thing. Now, the nature of the supersolid changes significantly from high filling, which high in this case means just 4 or 5 particles inside these little blobs, because when you have this kind of number of particles, or maybe 500 or 5,000 particles there inside, the ground state is essentially just like a liquid with a little bit of ripples. Now, the point is that the ripples self-assemble in a crystalline structure. Now, what is happening different at low density is that you start from kind of the dual situation. You start from a crystalline state where just in a little amount of defects, just a very small amount of defects plotted here, give you a superfluid fraction, which is a highly non-trivial process, because typically defects in the crystals, essentially both in classical and quantum crystals, they tend to cluster in free space. While here we have found a mechanism, so this was work in collaboration with Wolfgang Lechner and Fabio Cinti, we have found a mechanism in which we can turn defective interactions from attractive to repulsive. And this can give rise to the stabilization of supersolid behavior even at low densities. And this is really analogous to what people were trying to look for in the counter-sealing form.
But should we understand that then there is kind of a critical number of defects which is allowed then to jump to the next phase? Or is it what this...
Number is one. You just need the one defect. You see it's linear. So if you plot here, then if you go in the right parameter regime, if you have exactly 2 particles per site, it's a crystal. Like, forget about these lines here. You'd have a little droplets with two particles per site. If you now remove just one single particle, this one will start the vacancy will start hopping around, providing a superfluid fraction. You just need one. Mm-hmm. The point is that when you have two, typically they attract each other and they make phase separation. In this case, they don't. And so you have a delocalization of vacancies and the formation of a superfluid fraction. So one is enough. Two is better.
Going back to your Rydberg cooling experiment, in practical terms, you actually wanted to set this up. What are the properties of the molecules that you need? And you said that NaH is the ideal molecule. I think from many of our points of view, that's not an ideal molecule, but... I mean, could you do it with OH, for example? Do the molecules need to be cold to start with? Do they need to have a narrow velocity distribution? What's actually going to work in this?
Yes, so maybe I can go back to that. But so the... Okay, where is it? So one thing one would like to have is, first of all, they have to be cold. They have to be pre-cooled to say at least below 10 millikelvin. Otherwise, this will not work. And the reason why it will not work is because it's very hard to make any barrier between the atoms and the molecule, which is of that size. Unless one is maybe, so one way out of that could be to do calculation, which we have not done yet, we are trying to do, which is to really plot the real potential and try to see, even if at much shorter distances, you can make much larger repulsive interaction between the atom and the molecule. But if you stay far away where you're sure that there are no other level crossing and everything is well defined, then it's very hard to get anything which is below a few millikelvin. So the first thing, you need molecules which are pre-cooled to below 10 millikelvin. That's the first limitation. So anything which can cool up to there, we can try. The second thing, you want to have very large rotational splitting for those reasons. You can also go to, you know, different situations. That's not a problem. The point is that you will have different kind of problems in the system. The problems will come in terms of spontaneous emission on the atomic side, which can become a problem if a molecule flies by and has spontaneous emission and the unwanted region. In an unwanted region, you can have very bad collisions coming from essentially these dipole moments, which shows up in the transition dipole moments at the wrong time.
Would OH work rather than NaH in a doublet pi ground state?
Yeah, we're working on it.
Just a related question. You show only one Rydberg state, but in fact, they're pretty closely spaced. Wouldn't you have kind of a mess of avoided crossings in reality?
Absolutely. So the thing is, that's why exactly you want to have very large splitting, so that you can stay low in the Rydberg series. And what we've chosen, for example, is an NS state and with an N prime P state. And these are quite well separated by the other ones. That's exactly why we want to stay lower in the series, because the higher you go in the Rydberg series, the smaller the spacings become, the harder it becomes to be further tuned from anything. That's exactly the point.
For the supersolid phase, what determines the lattice constant? How does it compare with the crystal phase?
It's essentially of the, well, you're an expert. I think you have a paper too on this kind of thing, right? So on the superfluid side. So the lattice constant is essentially 1 and 1.5, actually depends a little bit, the cutoff radius RC. So the cutoff radius in this case is the position where the potential switches from flat to power law. Okay, so take this position here where the system goes from flat to some decaying thing. Essentially, the lattice constant is roughly of this order. And there is a little range in which you can change, but it is defined by RC.
For the normal solid, it's the same?
Excuse me?
So you have also a normal solid phase.
Yeah,
right?
The normal solid can be anything. So as long as you go out of this region here, if you stay far outside here, say, then the lattice constant depends just on the density you have. So if you have large enough interaction that you are able to solidify the system, then you will get a solid at the interparticle distance corresponding to the density you have.
Okay, Lincoln is giving me a hard time here, so we're going to move on. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Martin Zeppenfeld from the Max Planck Institute for Quantum Optics. He will talk about cooling of polyatomic molecules.